This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Greetings, everyone. I'm Mary Jo Pullen, and this is City Beat. Pro-Palestinian protesters assemble in Covington as Israeli forces enter Rafah. Protesters from Cincinnati and northern Kentucky cities gathered in Covington on May 7 to send a message to politicians and passersby about the latest development in Gaza. "Shame, shame," chanted approximately 50 protesters at the corner of Pike Street and 7th Street. Mohammed Ahmad, head organizer of the Covington for Ceasefire organization, addressed the growing crowd gathered on a wide median. "You want to pass a public comment ordinance because you don't want to listen to us? That's fine. You're going to hear it from the street," Ahmad shouted from behind a keffiyeh wrapped around the lower half of his face. Covington for Ceasefire was not the only organization to brave the threat of severe storms. Cincinnati Socialists, Cincinnati Community Aid and Praxis, Kentuckians for the Commonwealth, Northern Kentucky University Students for Justice in Palestine, and Coalition for Community and Safety all showed up. They were protesting not only a proposed ordinance in Covington that could limit public comment at commission meetings, but taxpayers' contributions to Israel's war effort in Gaza. "Israel just started bombing Rafah. They started their invasion, the one that should not be happening, after they literally evacuated over 1.5 million people to the most densely populated place on earth, knowing they're going to be at risk, knowing they have nowhere to go," Ahmad told City Beat. "The United States is just greenlighting it with our tax dollars, including Covington tax dollars. We're here to say no, we're not okay with that." According to the Associated Press, Israeli troops seized control of Gaza's Rafah border crossing on May 7. CNN is reporting that the U.S. State Department has described Israel's seizure of the crossing as a possible prelude to a major military operation. The move comes as reports of a possible ceasefire deal between Israel and Hamas has stalled, with Israel's government saying Hamas failed to meet its requirements. Israel has reportedly sent a delegation to Cairo, where negotiations continue. But Egypt has also condemned Israel's move into Rafah as a dangerous escalation, according to NPR. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres told reporters on May 7 that Israel's invasion of Rafah would be a strategic mistake, a political calamity, and a humanitarian nightmare. The Israeli Defense Forces, or IDF, told reporters on May 8 that forces are conducting a precise counterterrorism operation in specific areas of eastern Rafah, including targeted raids, according to CNN. Israeli airstrikes hitting Rafah have killed hundreds of civilians since late March, according to NPR. Since the October 7 attacks in Israel by Hamas militants that left upwards of 1,200 Israelis dead, Israel's counteroffensive measures have killed more than 34,000 people in Gaza, mostly women and children. It's unclear just how many of the 250 Israeli citizens who were taken hostage after October 7 remain alive in Gaza. Listening to Palestinian voices. Hatem Daleh is a Palestinian American who turned out for the Covington demonstration. "He wants people to pay attention to the voices of Palestinians, especially those living in fear in Gaza. I'm here because I'm a Palestinian," he said. "With our voices being here at protests or reposting what people in Palestine show us every day on social media, we're showing it to the people here in the United States." Jack Fogel is also a Palestinian American. He may have grown up in Kentucky, but he's had decades to learn the history of his mom's far-flung side of the family. "My mother is Palestinian. She's from the West Bank. My father's from Appalachian, Kentucky," Fogel said. He used his family history and connection with the pain experienced by Palestinians to write a play that will debut at the Cincinnati Fringe Festival in June. I was just kind of writing it for fun, and then when October 7 happened, I decided I needed to write it, he said. My play got picked to the primary lineup, and it's about a Palestinian family. They're grieving the loss of their mother, who's from Palestine. And it's kind of the process of their grief and how they deal with it, and when they're preparing for the funeral. Everybody who plays a Palestinian is of Arab descent, so I tried really hard to be conscientious about the voices that are represented in the show. A portion of the proceeds from Fogel's show will go to Palestinian charities, including the Palestinian Children's Relief Fund. Fogel said his play is only one small moment of education in a wide array of voices that can teach about the life of Palestinians. Listen to the voices of Palestinians and highlight their voices, amplify their voices, he said. I could recommend books, I could recommend movies, I could recommend documentaries. But at the end of the day, if you seek out the voices of Palestinians, you'll hear the truth. The hashtags about the ongoing war in Gaza are immeasurable at this point. Hashtag Palestine has had 5.6 million hits on TikTok alone. Fogel doesn't want the newfound mainstream spotlight on Palestine to fade, but he wants people to advocate consciously, not just because it's a popular cause for young people. It's really cool to see it entering the collective consciousness. I have to say, there's a little part of me that's afraid that it might be like a fad, he said. I hope that this awareness continues into the future, and I'm really hopeful that it will. Thurman Wenzel showing up to protest in Covington shows how the Free Palestine movement is a lifelong effort for some. The most senior demonstrator, Wenzel, said he's inspired by the youth's turnout for Palestinians. My main focus is encouraging young people who have just gotten involved to understand the history, to understand that its history did not begin on October 7, Wenzel said. I've been doing this for approximately 50 years. There have been previous generations of Palestinian activists. The Israeli government is totally off base in suggesting that they can, quote unquote, win the war against Hamas. Even if they kill every member of Hamas, another Palestinian group is going to pop up and be even more angry. Their only solution is to find a ceasefire and negotiations to share the land. Wren, who didn't want to share their last name, is an organizer for Cincinnati Socialists. They said, for young voters, the threat of another Donald Trump presidency just isn't enough to overlook Biden's foreign policy after October 7. The two-party system will not save us. This is not a democracy. This is fascism, Wren said. There's no place within government, bourgeois government, for them to ever cease to our demands. A vote will not bring any form of justice or peace to us, no matter who we vote for. Young leaders. Layla Shake is president of the University of Cincinnati's Students for Justice in Palestine organization, UCSJP. She has been leading the way for UC students, but UCSJP hasn't held any of the widely reported student protests on its Clifton campus. Shake told CityBeat that UC's semester wrapped earlier than most universities in Ohio. She said UCSJP has been joining other SJP chapters across the state instead, protesting in encampments on their campuses and building strength in numbers. We thought it'd be most powerful to do it in the state capital, you know, Columbus, just because Ohio as an entire state is the second largest investor in Israeli bonds right after New York, she said. We wanted to make sure that our voices are heard, not just by our administration and not just by OSU, but also by the State House. One of the protests that took place on OSU's campus resulted in the use of force by law enforcement against protesters, including Shake, who said she was beaten while praying. I was a part of the people that was praying while the state troopers started beating us, like I still have bruises up and down my back, she said. Literally, there's nothing more peaceful than praying. and I got beat for doing one of my 5 daily prayers where I can't control the time of when we have to do that. Sheikh works closely with the Council on American Islamic Relations, or CAIR. She said she can feel the increase in Islamophobia since October 7, especially in the way law enforcement responds to protests. In Ohio alone, CAIR reported a 600% increase in Islamophobic incident reports between October 7 and November 4, 2023, with incidents ranging from verbal abuse to physical assaults. It's because of anti-Palestinian rhetoric and because of Islamophobia, and this is even more than during 9/11, Sheikh said. It feels like we're going backwards in time. It just feels like they're trying so hard to criminalize us and make us feel almost like we're doing something wrong for existing. Anti-Semitism has also seen a spike in recent months. In April, the Anti-Defamation League, or ADL, released their 2023 statistics for anti-Semitic incidents in the U.S., reporting a 140% increase in assaults, harassment, and vandalism, the highest level recorded since ADL started tracking incidents in 1979. Included in these incidents are anti-Israel demonstrations, which, according to the ADL, tip into the definition of anti-Semitic when protesters use words and phrases like genocide or from the river to the sea, or when protesters call Zionism a racist endeavor. "I'm sorry they feel uncomfortable by the truth," said Ahmad. "I'm sorry they're uncomfortable by the fact that the truth hurts. But it is a genocide, and Zionism is racism. I'm not worried about their feelings. I'm worried about the fact that people are being wiped off the face of the earth." Win some pricey and hard-to-find spirits at the KSO's annual Rare Bourbon Raffle. You could win some rare spirits and help fund free concerts with the Kentucky Symphony Orchestra's annual Rare Bourbon Raffle this month. The Party Source, a neighbor of KSO and longtime supporter, donated a 6-bottle set of the November 2023 release of Rip and Pappy Van Winkle Bourbon, a 5-bottle set of Buffalo Trace Antique Collection, and 20 rare and pricey bourbons for the fundraiser. The raffle drawing is happening at 9 p.m. on Saturday, May 18, on the KSO's website and via a Facebook Live. The fundraiser helps support KSO's initiatives of bringing free, family-friendly performances to DeVue and Tower Parks for the summer, as well as fund education outreach concerts for 260 regional schools. The first raffle will feature the Rip and Pappy Van Winkle bourbon set, with tickets going for $100 a chance and only 750 tickets being sold. One winner will be drawn on May 18 to win all 6 bottles. A second raffle will be for the Buffalo Trace Antique Collection, including George T. Stagg, 15 years, Sazerac Rye, 18 years, W. L. Weller, 12 years, T. H. Handy, 6 years, and Eagle Rare, 17 years. Tickets for this set are $50 and limited to 1,000 chances. The final raffle will yield 20 winners, with each winner receiving a hard-to-find and rare bourbon. Bourbons up for this raffle include a 3-bottle lot of Weller, including Weller Antique 107, Full Proof, and Original 12-Year, New Riff's 6-Year Malted Rye, Buckner's 10-Year Single Barrel, and more. You can see a full list of bourbons up for this raffle can be found at kyso.org. Tickets are $25 per chance, with a limit of 1,500 tickets available. One ticket will be drawn for each bourbon or lot. You can buy your tickets for the raffle at kyso.org. Ticket sales end on May 18 at 4 p.m. Winners will be drawn at 9 p.m. and notified by email with instructions on how to pick up their prizes. Keep in mind that KSO cannot ship alcohol, so someone will need to pick it up in person. You do not need to be watching the live stream in order to win. Crown Restaurant Group announces concept for new restaurant, and it's smashing, darlings. In January, Crown Restaurant Group, or CRG, the owners behind some of Cincinnati's most popular restaurants, announced it would be opening its sixth eatery in the Foundry in downtown Cincinnati. Now, CRG is revealing the concept behind it, a London-style public house. CRG owners Chef Anthony Sitek and his wife, Haley Nutter Sitek, plan to open their new restaurant later this year in a 4,000-square-foot space between the Davidson and Five Iron Golf. While they're still working on a name, the Siteks have also been developing the menu and designing the space. The menu will be meat-forward with a lot of Indian influence, curries, chutneys, samosas, naan, and more. These items all became staples of traditional London public houses after many South Asian factory workers immigrated to Britain in the 70s, and the demand for Indian dishes in Greater London skyrocketed. But like any other CRG restaurant, which includes Crown Republic, Five on Vine, Crown Cantina, Rosie's Italian, and Lo Santi, guests can also expect pasta and steak dishes, as well as a variety of beer, wine, and cocktails. This is a big pivot for us, Anthony Sitek said in a press release. We want to do something that hadn't been done yet, to create something new and exciting where people could enjoy great food in a great atmosphere. With all the heavy hitters nearby, Jeff Ruby, Thunderdome, and Jose Salazar, to name a few, it just made sense for us to join the party. The reimagined convention center is going to draw a lot of people to the area surrounding the Foundry, and we want to be a part of it. Build-out of the restaurant is underway, with the Siteks saying they hope to celebrate the grand opening in late 2024. Haley's mother, Vicky Nutter of the Nutter Group, is handling the interior design, which will feature classic London public house touches, like hunter green walls and Victorian design schemes, including upholstered pews from a church on 9th Street that recently closed. The restaurant will be open 7 days a week, initially just for dinner, but with plans to include breakfast and lunch in the future. The Foundry is located at 50 West 5th Street in downtown. Cincinnati's Potter's Field is officially on the National Register of Historic Places. Now what? Cincinnati's Potter's Field was officially added to the National Register of Historic Places last week, but city leaders aren't talking about next steps for the site. Potter's Field, located in West Price Hill, is a long-neglected historical burial ground where people, often poor or unidentified, were buried from the mid-1800s to 1981. The graves, most of which are unmarked, stretch across roughly 26 acres at the northwest side of Gurley Road into Rapid Run Park. In an October cover feature, City Beat detailed the extensive efforts of local historians who are identifying the backstories of those who ended up in Potter's Field, including cholera patients, Civil War soldiers, bodies used for medical science, people who were involuntarily committed to institutions, and individuals whose families were unaware of their burial location. Once the city stopped burying people in Potter's, the site was all but abandoned. Invasive overgrowth, trash, and time have buried the once visible grave markers, swallowing the evidence of thousands of lost lives. After a community push to investigate just how far into Rapid Run Park the unmarked burials stretched, the site was recommended to join the register in December during an Ohio Historic Site Preservation Advisory Board meeting. The application for the honor was submitted by Mike Morgan, an attorney and adjunct horticulture instructor at the University of Cincinnati. He told CityBeat the state's recommendation for the site to join the list was the biggest hurdle for the site, but he's glad the National Parks Service approved potters across the finish line. There's always some possibility that there's an objection there, but we got it through, he said. It was mostly a matter of waiting. But nevertheless, it wasn't official until it was official. And now it is. Potter's Field advocates, including family members of those interred at the site, have pushed for years to see the cemetery cleaned up and properly maintained. Sandy Rice, an amateur genealogical researcher and historian, has been researching the mass grave site for more than 10 years. Her efforts are outlined in City Beat's October cover, including her passion for restoring dignity to the ground that houses her own great-grandfather. All of us want the same thing, Rice told City Beat in October. We'd like to see the cemetery put back into a state of respect. Now that Potters has joined the National Register of Historic Places, Morgan said there's a chance the site could see improvements, but it's not a guarantee. The National Register doesn't force any particular behavior, he said. It's really kind of voluntarily compliant. But what it does is it makes it clear to the city that there is significance to this site. But the most important aspect is that, aside from bringing attention to it and bringing some respect to it, just in that way, it opens up additional grant funding. City Beat reached out to Cincinnati Parks, the department that oversees Potter's Field, to ask if there's a plan for the city to apply for these grants. City Parks spokesperson Rocky Mers told City Beat that Cincinnati Parks Director Jason Barron was unavailable for an interview, but provided a statement on the historical status recognition for Potter's. We are grateful that Potter's Field has been added to the National Register of Historic Places. This designation will help us continue our commitment to protecting and preserving this area to honor the memory of all those buried here, reads a statement from Barron. City Beat has requested interviews with Barron to discuss Potter's Field repeatedly since October, requests which have been met with silence or canned statements. In City Beat's previous reporting on Potter's, City Manager Cheryl Long told City Beat that there are no plans to develop or change Potter's Field. Cincinnati's Potter's Field is only the second cemetery that was reserved only for the identified and poor to make the National Register of Historic Places. The first was City Cemetery in Hot Springs, Arkansas, according to the Department of Interior's online catalog of historic places. According to the City of Hot Springs website, City Cemetery was added to the register in 2021, but cleanup efforts to improve landscaping around the graves started years earlier. Through a citizens-driven initiative to uncover the history of the cemetery, the city began the monumental task of restoring the property, the site reads. According to a report from KARK, an NBC affiliate out of Little Rock, that monumental effort was spearheaded by Hot Springs local Karen White and her husband, Brian White. Actually, we brought in a herd of goats, Hot Springs City Manager Bill Burrow told KARK. It's hallowed ground. City Beat reached out to Hot Springs officials to inquire about the cost of maintaining City Cemetery, but officials did not respond by press time. Graders releases first-time limited bonus flavor of 2024. In one of the first true signs that summer is approaching, Graders Ice Cream has released its first bonus flavor of the season, and we're going nuts over it. Each year, the local favorite French pot ice cream maker typically releases 5 secret bonus flavors over the summer, and it has just unveiled the first in line, peanut brittle. Graders describes the flavoring as having a butterscotch base mixed with praline peanuts. If you love rich, creamy ice cream with a touch of sweet and nutty flavor, this one's for you. The combination of butterscotch, base, and praline peanuts creates a perfect balance of smoothness and crunch, the ice cream parlor said in an email. Each bonus flavor remains a secret until the day of its release, and will only be available for a limited time, Grater said. Once the flavor is gone from the scoop shops and online, the flavor is retired for the year. Peanut brittle is now available at Grater's ice cream shops and at Grater's.com. Grater's fans can also be intrigued by even more secret flavors this year with the Mystery Tasting Pack. Available to buy on Grater's website for $85, the tasting pack features 6 unmarked pints of unreleased flavors with scorecards and pint number tags for a blind tasting. College Hill comic shop Manga Manga to host Anime Film Festival this summer. The inaugural Cincinnati Anime Film Festival is coming this summer with a lineup of screenings for all ages that span 2 months. The festival lineup is set to be released during a launch party at Woodward Theater on June 3. College Hill comic book shop Manga Manga is hosting the festival, which will be held at the Hollywood Drive-In Theater with weekly screenings beginning July 11 and running through August 8. At the launch party, Manga Manga will screen Ghost in the Shell from 1995, directed by Mamoru Oshii. The film will be screened in Japanese with English subtitles. The Cincinnati Anime Festival, or CAFF, shares Manga Manga's vision of celebrating Asian culture and is eager to screen films that began as comics, according to a press release. Manga and anime go hand in hand. We are excited to expand the shop's reach and present films to the community that celebrate the art of Japanese animation, C. Jacqueline Wood, owner of Manga Manga and founder of CAFF, said in a release. Many anime films originated as comics, and we're excited to present films that started out on the page. Movies bring people together, and the Cincinnati Anime Film Festival is just another exciting project in our mission to build community and celebrate Asian art and stories. Tickets for the launch screening are on sale now. The launch screening begins at 7 p.m. on June 3 at the Woodward Theater. Tickets are $8 in advance and $10 at the door. Find them at CincyAnimeFilmFestival.com. Individual festival tickets go on sale June 4 at noon, and the first festival screening will be July 11. Follow CAFF on Instagram at CincyAnimeFilmFestival and at Manga_Cincinnati for up-to-date information. Well, that's all we have time for today. I'll be back next time with more City Beat. I'm Mary Jo Pullen. Have a terrific day.